Well, good evening. The time being 5:30, I will open the meeting. It's my pleasure to welcome everyone here this evening to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 16th of May 2022. Welcome to members of the community who are in the public gallery this evening, and also to those people who are watching along on home via YouTube. The time being 5:30, I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirmed.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. The attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, Deputy Mayor Councillor Westwood, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Stevenson, our Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, our NAB Coordinator, Ms Quinn, our Strategic Sport and Recreation Planner, Mr Wade, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillors Bastone and Gladewright. On page one now, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 8, held on the 2nd of May 2022, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Westwood. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. There was a workshop last Monday evening, the 9th of May, in relation to rates relief. Moving to page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. My declaration relates to sports facilities fee, sports ground user fees. I'm on the board of Gymnastics Tasmania, and upon advice from the general manager, I will remain in the room.
Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I also have one in relation to that matter. I have children enrolled in the Kimber Alliance Soccer Club.
And is it your intention to stay in the room?
Stay in the room.
Yep. Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Oh, thank you. If we're declaring interests of that nature, then I also have children who use those sports facilities.
Thank you.
I will be staying in the room.
Thank you. Any further? Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I have received interest in a number of sporting clubs, including the football, the soccer, the cricket and gymnastics.
Thank you.
Staying in the meet.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we can just anticipate that at some stage we've all been involved in some capacity within sporting clubs within the municipality, but we can't all exit the room, so thank you, duly noted. Still on page two, transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to move from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Still on page two, questions without notice in the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? No. Thank you. Questions on notice from the public. At the time that the agenda was compiled, there were no questions without notice from the public, but if members do wish to put a question on notice, they can send it to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Grace.
I just have two small ones. Through you, Mayor, I wonder if the engineering services could have a look at Beach Road. The new ceiling has failed at the section where the home entrance is. Quite a big area there. And also, while you're there, could you also look at the gully pits, they're chock-a-block full of gravel and rubbish.
Mr. Reid, I'm assuming you're meaning Beach Road in Snug. Thank you. Mr. Reid?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, certainly I can have a look at that one there and put it forward as a customer service request.
Thank you.
Sorry, there's just one other. I spoke with one of Mr. Reeves, Officer Renee. The IGA at Snug, while somebody's down there from engineering, my question is, would council allow another entrance to come off? I can't remember the side street, I should know, but the little side street to reduce the bottleneck there when the buses and they're all pull up there in the morning and people try and pull out past the buses instead of waiting. There's a rule, flashing lights, so it's 40 kilometres, but really in that sort of area they should stop. I'm just wondering if they could have a look at that option while they're in the area.
You. I can see that Mr. Reeve has written it down. I could also see his brain ticking over as he was processing that and trying to... Thank you. That's noted. Councillor Watts.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I also have a couple of questions to Mr. Reeve, perhaps. I'd like Mr. Reeve to answer a couple of questions on the Jamala Road reconstruction. Namely, when did works commence, where are we at the moment, and the date expected for the reconstruction works to be completed?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I won't have an exact date and when they commenced there, but it was going back about three or four weeks ago when they commenced the works down at Jamala. We expect those works there will continue on into the next financial year. We're also waiting on Tasnet Works to actually do some relocations down in that area as well. And councillors will be aware with the workshops we've had a look at that there's a proposal in the draft budget there to do Jamala Stage 2 as well. So it's likely that those works in that area will continue well into the calendar year.
Thank you, Mayor. I was just wondering whether Mr. Reeve might tell us whether it's July, August, September or whenever, if he has an idea.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, like all projects there, it's going to depend a little bit on the weather now that we're getting into the wetter part of the season there. That one is due to be completed probably around about August, September. But as I said, we'll be weather dependent.
Thank you. And if I can have a second question in relation to the Snug Tiers Road reconstruction. When did works commence? How far are we at? And the date expected for that reconstruction works to be completed?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So fairly similar for that one as well. So I believe they have commenced up through there. I haven't been down there lately, but I believe they have. And I, from memory, think that the completion date for that is probably pushing more towards September or late September.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Next, I've got Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about carbon abatement and renewable energy generation at Beretta. And my question, the background to this question is that recently Councillor Fox and myself and the General Manager visited Copping Seacell, and we were informed about the various environmental activity benefits that are going on there. The facility will reduce nearly 122,000 tonnes of CO2 equivalent from being emitted each year. My question is about trying to take those lessons from Copping Seacell and what capacity we have to implement similar things at Beretta. So my question is, what is Council doing to help facilitate carbon abatement at Beretta, and what else can we do to improve environmental outcomes from Beretta? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Certainly we have a fairly active gas field there, so where we actually are obviously collecting the gases that come from the landfill there and actually disposing them. One of the issues we actually have with Beretta there is in terms of, unlike Copping there, which has probably been designed in a slightly different way, it's fairly variable in terms of the type of material, which means that it's actually very hard to actually harvest the gas and reuse the gas. So the best that we can actually do there is actually flare the gas, if you like, and actually change into something that's less harmful to the environment. And it's only been in, it's probably been a couple of stages there, so we initially put in a number of wells down at Beretta there, and probably going back 2 years or so ago, we actually extended the amount of wells that we actually had in that area there to actually collect more of that gas from that area as well. And that's probably the best and most active way that we can manage that particular landfill there to get the best environmental outcome.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A few questions regarding the appendix items. If you could provide an update, and apologies I didn't give you this before, an update on the Greater Hobart Mayor's Forum and the Greater Hobart Committee meeting, just any key points that we could be made aware of, please.
So the focus of those meetings the last couple of months in particular has been preparing the federal election requests on behalf of the Greater Hobart Mayors. And over the last couple of months, we've been submitting those to a range of different parties and candidates. There have been some commitments as part of that that have been made by some in relation to the Labor Party had made a commitment of additional funding for the Derwent River Ferry Service, and that's something that we do hope, while the initial expansion would take in places like Wilkinson's Point at Glenorchy and Lindisfarne, the difference is there is already infrastructure in place there, but certainly the intention is that further down the track it also involves Kingborough. The other substantial work that we've been doing recently has been in relation to the Greater Hobart plan, formerly known as the Metro Plan, that was just released last week to look at future land supply requirements. So I did take the opportunity to raise with Minister Ferguson the question of whether the bus, the free bus trial would be extended. It's my view that it wasn't held at the best of times because it incorporated school holidays, so there were less regular commuters on the road. It was also a period of time where Metro were significantly impacted by having to cancel services due to COVID and a shortage of drivers. And so given that the Greater Hobart Mayors had put in a state budget submission suggesting that perhaps bus fares could be reduced by 30% in order to encourage a greater take-up of regular bus travel, we thought it was an opportunity perhaps to ask for the free bus trial to be extended. Unfortunately, that was met with a hard no from Minister Ferguson, with the view that it was only ever a five-week initiative in order to ease the cost of living related to the increase in fuel prices. So I see that as a bit of a missed opportunity, given that only 6.2% of people who actually live in Kingborough actually commute by public transport for work regularly. So anyway, that's we are pushing on with a further request in our state budget submission.
Thank you for that. And the item related to plastic-free places, if we could have more information on that, please.
So that is an initiative that has been through the Boomerang Alliance. They received a grant to set up that initiative. And we are working with the Kingborough Huon Business Enterprise Centre to put businesses in touch. That organisation will then put businesses in touch with others that can help them reduce the plastics that they use, encourage them to go from plastic containers to biodegradable containers, make suggestions about water bottles and refilling stations rather than selling plastic bottles. So it was quite an exciting initiative, and we thought that it would be something that the Business Enterprise Centre could be well involved with because they do have the business contacts, and so we're working with them. I think there's about five councils from memory in the state who are involved with this through the grant, so we're quite fortunate to be one of those that they receive funding for.
Thank you. And a question regarding, I noticed a Facebook post around Community Ask on the 4th of May. I'm wondering, and I note we've done an earlier one, so I'm wondering if a summary of what the community has provided feedback to will come at all to Council, and if there's any key notes or anything that staff would like to make comment on in regards to that.
Yep, Dr. Stevenson. Through you, Mayor. Yes, the Community Ask survey is something that we were trialling with Zen City, who we have a relationship with around a whole range of engagement activities. So we just asked two questions for this initial one. We haven't actually closed it yet. We wanted to get more responses, so we've re-promoted it. It will then be analysed independently by Zen City, and yes, we will provide that report both to officers and councillors.
Thank you.
And just on that, it would be really good if councillors could share that request for people to take part through our own social media accounts to draw more attention to it, to get greater feedback. That would be really appreciated by the staff. Any further questions without notice? No? If not, we'll move on. Still on page two, questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions without notice from the public. The open session of council now adjourns at 5:46 p.m. and the planning authority commences at 5:46 p.m. So turning now to page three, officers' reports to the planning authority. We have PSA 2021 number 2, amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to update the significant tree list. With a recommendation on page eight, I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please.
So moved.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. And a seconder, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a very important amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme that's proposed here. It's to consider the representations that we've received, and there have been a total of 22 of those, both in favour and against some of the significant trees that have been proposed for listing and for removal. Essentially, a significant tree policy is there to recognise and protect trees that are of significance. Now, that might be aesthetic, cultural, heritage or environmental values as compared with other trees in the municipality. And we are blessed in Kingborough to be an area that has a lot of trees, and there has been an enormous amount of community interest in trees over the 3 years that I've been on the council. And I think that reflects the fact that we care deeply about climate and we care deeply about our neighbourhood amenity. This proposal, essentially what we're looking at here in terms of the chronology of it, is that we're considering the feedback, and then it will, if passed tonight, as I hope that it will then go on to a final decision to the Tasmanian Planning Commission, and anyone who has made a submission will be invited to attend that hearing. So I think it's important at the outset to explain what part of the process we're up to now. So there's been an initial assessment, there's been a council report, there was this public exhibition period that has now closed. We've received those submissions to the council, and they are contained within this report. And so if this passes tonight, it will then go to the TPC. But it does mean that anybody who has made a submission does have the option to be invited to attend that hearing and provide their feedback. So here on the significant tree register, we are looking at the existing 24 listings representing a total of 425 significant trees. There will be 11 new listings representing 245 trees that meet the criteria of significance. This proposal is to delist two of the trees that don't exist anymore and amend the existing list, changing a grouping of five trees to four trees. The public exhibition period has been quite extensive, with being advertised in the Mercury twice, once in the Kingborough Chronicle, in writing to the owners and occupiers, many of whom availed themselves of the opportunity to make a submission to the council, and site notices as per the requirement under the land use planning legislation. And so I welcome the debate, but I think that what's important here is that this significant tree proposal, I believe, strikes a balance. Obviously, my preference would be to protect many more trees in Kingborough, but I recognise that this is a very live and active debate. it behoves me at this stage to say that safety is of paramount importance, but there has been a perception within the community that is not necessarily matched by the suitably qualified professionals, the professional arborists who have been giving their expert opinion. So I strongly recommend that community members who are interested in this do take a detailed look at the report in order to see the assessment of those experts. And I guess at this point I will just call out the elephant in the room and ask a question about the blue gum Eucalyptus globulus in front of 59 Roslyn Avenue, Kingston Beach. Under the recommendation here, I'm looking now at page 8, 6.4c, it recommends a management plan for the blue gum, which would include the following: tomography of the upper mid-trunk section of the tree to establish baseline data of trunk decay at this location, establishment of trunk lean monitoring sites to determine the rate, if any, of trunk subsidence over the road, removal of large or moderate-sized dead wood when required, and a risk assessment by an arborist annually or shorter time frame at the discretion of the general manager. I just think it would be helpful for those listening if somebody would like to comment on the issues around this particular tree and what is the expert assessment of this tree vis-à-vis its safety.
Thank you. I'll ask our NAB coordinator, Ms Quinn, to address that, please. Ms Quinn.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. So this tree that's on Council's Road Reserve adjacent to 59 Roslyn Avenue has had multiple arborist reports done over the last few years. So the most we've had two different arborists assess the tree to ensure that we're acting with integrity, and we've released those arborist reports to community who would like those to make sure we're being transparent about it. So basically this tree, as any gum tree from time to time, has dropped small, you wouldn't call them limbs, small branches and twigs onto the road, as gums tend to do, but it has certainly, in January 2021, dropped a larger limb. And an aerial arborist assessment, so an arborist who climbed the tree, said that the branch was likely to already have been cracked previously, and in that storm event it fell onto the road, not causing any injuries, thankfully. So both of the assessments that have been done in January 2021 and in October 2021 by the arborist have both said that the tree is an acceptable risk. It's got a hollow in it, but that hollow has been assessed by an arborist. It's got strong wood around it. It's been maintained three or four times over the last probably 4 years. So it's had dead wood taken out of it. It's also had, as you can see in the report, a tilt test done for it very recently. So under very strong wind conditions, it had monitors on it to see how much the trunk moved under strong wind conditions from wind coming from different aspects, and it did really well in that test, and there was hardly any tilt in the trunk at all, completely acceptable. So the last recommendation from that management plan that needs to be done is the tomography of the upper trunk. So as I said, that has been assessed by the arborist when they climbed the tree, but we can also do tomography where they actually, it's a bit like an ultrasound for a tree, where they actually look at how much dead wood there is. So Council will have that completed soon.
Thank you, Ms Quinn.
Thank you. Councillor and Cordova. My final question, I guess, before I welcome the debate from my colleagues, is it true that even if a tree is listed on the Significant Tree Register, that if it is unsafe, that it can be dealt with?
That is correct.
Thank you. So I guess in summary, I just want to make very clear that I highly recommend people look at page 4, the implications of significant tree listing. All of the submissions that related to safety, please be reassured that the following works are exempt from the Significant Tree Code. Those that, if a tree possesses an immediate danger to persons or property as authorised by a public authority or a qualified arborist. And so I have been assured by the General Manager and others that if there were to be a risk to safety as expressed by a qualified arborist, that no significant tree listing will come at the expense of public safety. So I hope I've made that clear. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. While understanding that no tree will be listed at the expense of public safety, I do think that they are potentially proposed to be listed at the expense of common sense. So while we are proposing to add 245 trees to the significant tree list, there were two trees that came up as part of our public consultation. One tree in front of the Surf Life Saving Club at Kingston Beach, which has been now recommended to not be listed, and another tree, as Councillor Cordova alluded to, at 59 Roslyn Avenue. Approximately 12 months ago, this tree dropped not a branch or a twig. This tree dropped a branch or a limb big enough to span the whole width of Roslyn Avenue. It required residents who were there at the time to stop traffic, and it required a council chipper to attend the scene to remove the branch. So given there are a large number of pedestrians, cyclists and motorists who use what we term this connector to be an arterial route from Blackmans Bay to Kingston, I would think that common sense tells us that the risk of a safety incident happening is fairly high. Parks and Wildlife Service say that Tasmanian bluegums quickly reach heights in excess of 40 metres, have large spreading roots and potentially dangerous falling limbs. Bluegums are not suitable species for residential gardens, urban parks or schoolyards. There was one representation to keep this tree. It came from the same person who requested it be listed on the significant tree list back in 2012. That representation was late, so while council has received it, technically it wasn't received as part of the within the timeframe for representations being made. And in contrast to that, there were numerous representations made from local residents arguing that the tree did pose a risk to them. Some of them were walking along over the past 12 months on two occasions when that tree dropped limbs or branches, certainly more than twigs, onto the road, and they are very concerned that the tree poses a safety risk. So, yes, there have been two arborist reports, but I would argue that any tree that drops a limb that requires a chipper truck to attend the scene and remove it poses a safety risk. In addition to that, and more broadly speaking on the significant tree register, I don't understand why we need to list trees that are on council land in the first place. No one can come along and get rid of one of those trees without council permission. So why do we even bother going to all this trouble to argue amongst ourselves to list a tree that we are the only ones who can remove at the end of the day, subject to there being enough support for that to happen? So I would like to move an amendment to add in that we delist the bluegum Eucalyptus globulus at 59 Roslyn Avenue.
So can you read out the amendment so that Mrs Morton is aware of what it is that you're proposing?
I can. So it would be a second dot point under A, that the bluegum in brackets Eucalyptus globulus, the bluegum in front of 59 Roslyn Avenue.
She has to spell that. Hang on. She'll get back to that.
Globulus.
We'll fill in that bit later.
In front of 59 Roslyn Avenue, be delisted.
Okay, so I have an amendment. Do I have a second? So the amendment is moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Street. Councillor Westwood on the amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. Specifically in relation to this tree, I believe that, well, as an elected representative, I'm not comfortable to accept the risk that this tree is not going to drop another limb that requires a chipper truck to come and remove it. Because if my child is walking, cycling, or I'm driving beneath that tree at that point in time, a limb of that size poses a safety risk, and I don't think that that's an acceptable risk, and I'm not willing to take that on. And it is council that takes on that risk. We have a responsibility to ensure that that we consider the safety of our residents and that we make sure that trees are not going to drop limbs large enough to do damage to people or property. I think we have heard from enough local residents to legitimately say there is a concern in the community about this particular tree. We are listing, as part of this, 245 trees. So while I'm all for a beautiful amenity and protecting beautiful trees, I don't think that this one tree is warranted listing, and I would like it to be delisted. And I have one question in relation to the management plan. If this tree is listed and council undertakes the management plan, what will be the cost to ratepayers per annum to undertake the management plan, please?
Anybody? Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. The annual requirements are going to vary year to year depending on the tree. We do this for all trees on council land, so it's not going to be just about this tree. A risk assessment is likely to cost council in the order of between $250 and $500 a year, and the other things don't need to be done annually. So per year, it's probably somewhere between $250 and $500, which is quite normal for all of the a lot of the trees that are on prominent council areas along our beaches and main roads and things.
So is that $250 to $300 just for this tree's management plan?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, $250 to $500 for an arborist assessment to be done annually for this tree. So it'd be very difficult to quantify. It's already had the removing of the dead wood, so that's not likely to need to occur for a little while. It depends. I mean, trees, you can't predict how a tree, that's why we assess them annually. So you can't predict the cost of what works are likely to be for that tree nor any other tree on council land. But the arborist report is likely to be between $250 and $500, probably closer to the lower end because it's an annual assessment, and so it's just building on what we already know about that tree.
Thank you. So I guess I would make the other point then that for $250 to $500 a year to implement a management plan for this one tree, that local residents in that area of Kingston really don't want to be listed on the significant tree list. I think, again, that is nonsensical to me. So I would urge my colleagues to support the delisting of this tree. It doesn't mean the tree's going anywhere. It just means that it's not going to be on the significant tree list.
General Manager wants to say something.
Through you, Mayor, can I just make the point, and my colleague, Ms. Tyler Moore, may wish to add to this, that whilst the amendment is certainly appropriate under the Local Government Act and the Meeting Procedures Regulations, my understanding, if I'm correct, is that if the amendment is supported by Council tonight and then becomes the resolution of Council, that it would probably most likely result in Council being required to re-advertise the whole process again.
Can I just ask for some clarification on that? Would that be to redo the whole process or redo the process for just this tree? Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we'd need to take some direction from the TPC, but basically the reason that it would need to start the process again is that the planning scheme amendment was to do A, B, C, which was list the new ones, take the two off that have already been removed, and that third amendment about the numbers. But 59 Roslyn wasn't one that was advertised to be changed, so the public was unaware that that was intended to change. It's something that came out of the representations, so it could be, we obviously can be considered around the table, but it can't just simply amend the recommendation under section 39 to go back to them, because that's not what the amendment was for. So whether the TPC would direct us to have to do the whole planning scheme amendment again from start, or whether they'd say we'll proceed with what you've got and then do a separate planning scheme amendment to take 59 Roslyn off the list. because no other, so the rest of the public was unaware that there was an intent to remove 59 Roslyn, so it wouldn't be a fair and reasonable advertising or appropriate advertising of what would go up.
So a suggestion then on the way forward is that we don't address the tree at 59 Roslyn Avenue tonight, so that this process for the remaining 245 trees can go forward, and that if it is the will of council to revisit the 59 Roslyn Avenue tree, that be done as a separate item at a later date. Is that...
Through you, or back to you, Mayor, rather. We can't be certain what the TPC direction would be. They do provide advice on these things. It would be worth getting their advice on that. So I guess the option would be that the matter be deferred. We would have to seek a further extension because we have a certain time frame that we have to do the Section 39 report, which is what this report is, back to them to get that advice for then councillors to make it, sorry, the planning authority to make a decision on that. It is possible, it's unlikely to be an issue that they would say that we couldn't have a further extension based on that question, but it is probably better to seek their advice about how to approach it.
Thank you. Councillor Grace, have you got a question?
Well, my question is, I think we're opening up a tin of worms, because if we... I don't know, I haven't been through the whole procedure. I know you've had workshops and discussed it before, which I was absent, but what worries me is I think this report, the way it reads, has got to go to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. Wouldn't that be the time if one or three trees people that don't want the trees to be listed, and I take it that all the trees that's listed for heritage, the owners and everyone's approved it, or has council just looked at the tree and said, we'll put it on the register, because I'm not quite clear.
So 59 Roslyn Avenue, that tree was listed on the register in 2012, and it wasn't advertised as part of this group of trees at the moment. So what Ms Tyler Moore is suggesting is that because we didn't actually ask the community about it in this lot of consultation, that we can't now throw it into the mix and say, oh, and by the way, we want it to be delisted, because we didn't specifically ask the community about that tree, even though people wrote in about it.
Well, that's what I was getting at. I can understand that. That's why I raised that issue.
I've questioned Ms Tyler Moore. I'm just thinking back to when we considered this was it February or late last year? I recall Councillor Street asking the question at the time, could we make some amendments to the trees that were going forward on that register? And I thought the advice was that it was possible. Can you just refresh my memory in relation to that? I don't know if Councillor Street, you want to add anything to... Is that correct?
Yes, and I think Councillor Street did ask the question not so long ago as well, perhaps during the workshop. The advice was this, that yes, you could make amendments to the ones that were listed, but it was the ones that are listed for the planning scheme amendment, because that's what you're talking about. You're talking about those as the subject matter, not all the existing listings. So the one outside the surf club is an example of one that's going on. That's what we were talking about. So it goes on and off. So, yes, you could change your mind on whether you wanted to put it on or off, but it doesn't mean that you get to start the whole process again because you haven't announced to the public and it's proposed to delist 59 Roslyn Avenue.
Okay.
But if the amendment doesn't go forward to take it off, then you may not need to face the question.
Okay. Councillor Street.
Mayor, look, I'm unsure how we proceed on this.
You and me both.
Yeah, and so I'm probably going to look to you and the General Manager for some advice. Because
excellent.
Well, I suppose my point is this. I don't want to push ahead with a deferral if the amendment's going to fail, because that would be a waste of everyone's time. And so I'm just wondering whether the General Manager has any bright ideas as to how we might resolve that. Obviously, once we have a vote, that's the end of the matter. Perhaps we have a vote, and if it passes, we then defer.
Do you want to say something? General Manager.
Through you, Mayor, and again, Ms Tyler Moore may wish to add to this. My response would be that if the indications are that the proposed amendment is not going to be supported, then we do not have an issue. If the proposed amendment is likely to be supported, then it may be appropriate for the Council at that point to then seek a deferral of the matter on the basis that we seek advice from the Town Planning Commission.
And then, so the question that follows that is, let's crystal ball this, let's assume that the amendment passes and we then defer. The advice comes back from the Planning Commission that, yes, you'll have to re-advertise everything. We decide that's a bridge too far. Would you accept an amendment going back in the other direction to take us back to the status quo?
I'm trying to understand what you just said.
Okay, so what I'm saying is if we amend the motion and then the Planning Commission come back to us and say, well, our advice is that, yes, you will have to re-advertise the whole thing if that's what your Section 39 report says, then will we be able to bring the matter back to Council and amend the motion to remove the amendment that we've just passed so that we then don't have to re-advertise?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not sure that I can give a definitive response on the spur of the moment. Yeah. I'd probably need to seek some guidance and check the legislation.
Can I ask a further question? I just want to get... I think that there could be some misunderstanding that what that amendment is doing is actually cutting the tree down at 59 Roslyn Avenue. So I think we need to be clear that that's not what it is proposing. It is proposing that that it be delisted. Now, if for some reason that the tree becomes unsafe, as deemed by an arborist with professional qualifications, at any time, regardless of whether the tree is on the list of the significant tree register or not, it can still be removed. Maintenance can be done on it, or it can be removed if it poses an immediate danger to property or individuals. So I think we need to just be very clear about that before we talk about this any further. But my question is, if the amendment does not pass, and so we haven't dealt with 59 Roslyn Avenue, so that we can keep the process alive for the other 245 trees that we have already gone to public consultation with, is there then an opportunity, given that we are now going to be having, once we've cleared this backlog, the nominations for the significant tree register will be open again for anybody to nominate? Surely that, in my mind, is the opportunity then for somebody to ask us to delist 59 Roslyn Avenue, and then as part of the next lot of trees that go forward for assessment, we deal with it then, because then we've gone through a legal process with the TPC. Is that correct?
That would be correct. The downfalls of doing it that way is the cost. It is a fair bit of cost and work that has to go into it, and you may end up in the same situation where council's advisors through the arborist and so forth still have the same position. Well, that's obviously likely, unless all of a sudden the tree was to have a failure, and if it had a failure then it would be removed anyway. So it may not be worth it. It may be more efficient to try and get it rolled into the one amendment. I mean, you could make the recommendations as suggested by Councillor Westwood and put it in there. I mean, this is not great advice. This isn't what I would normally say. Is that you put it through as whatever the planning authority determines it should be. It goes to the TPC, and we run the risk that it gets set back from the TPC. Not the end of the world. They will give us the direction about, well, you can't do that. We don't accept that. And the planning authority, councillors in the planning authority, have had a letter back to them before saying you haven't satisfied the requirement of Section 39. I can't remember which address it was for. So it's not the end of the world.
Okay.
It's not best practice. It would allow it to move forward because if, for whatever reason, they said, yes, it could go forward, then you can keep the process continuing. It comes back for another decision.
Okay, so they could send the whole lot back and say, well, sorry, but you can't do this one because you didn't do consultation on it.
Yes, so they might say, okay. And then you need to go do this process to do with it, which might just say advertise that tree because we've already got that at hand, or they might say advertise the whole lot, or they might say you can't do that, go back and make another decision.
Okay, so...
Or we could withdraw the amendment, because that's a council-driven amendment, this one. Council can withdraw the amendment if they desire.
Okay.
But you'll have to go through that process again.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Westwood.
I have a question. This whole process is obviously very confusing, but if one person nominated the tree in 2012, and we've known for quite some time that a group of concerned residents in the area of the tree have wanted it delisted, there's... Revision of the significant tree list came to us. We had the discussion. The tree wasn't added in any way to what happened when we went out for consultation. How on earth do you ever get a tree off the list?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the resolution when the planning authority sat to initiate the planning scheme amendment was the time to make those adjustments. So if you can appreciate, people would ask potentially for all sorts of trees to be cut down because they don't like she oak needles or they don't like the tree or they think it's dangerous and things like that. It doesn't mean that the council officers, as the officers have to do the amendment, will put that recommendation forward, but obviously the initiation, so the decision to send it to the TPC to consider it, is done by the planning authority.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Street.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I am asking some questions and also speaking to implore the mover to withdraw this amendment at this stage. My first question is, having heard that it will cost about $250 a year to look at this tree, what is the cost of redoing this process, considering two Mercury advertisements, a Kingborough Chronicle ad, site notices and in writing to owners and people adjacent? What is the proposed cost of potentially risking having to do this process again for that one tree? Is it more than $250
to $500? Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I don't have the cost at hand. Yes, it would be more than that to do the advertising and the assessments and the work that goes into it and the application fee to the TPC as well.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, it is important to note, and I'm reading directly from page 21, that having a tree listed or delisted as significant in the planning scheme does not necessarily increase or decrease the risk or the extent of council's liability. That's right there in the report. What we're talking about is completely separate from the issue of safety. So I've made the point very clear that actually the qualified arborists say it's a safe tree. But putting that aside, whether or not it's on the significant tree register has absolutely nothing to do with its safety anyway, because, as I outlined, even if it's unsafe, we can deal with it if and when it becomes unsafe. So the amendment, as I see it, is basically asking us to pay certainly thousands of dollars. I know that for one Mercury ad, it's probably a couple of grand. So we'll have to do two of those. So now we're up to $4,000 plus a Kingborough Chronicle ad. What's that, $500? So now we're at $4,500. And why? For something that is completely tangential, unrelated. In fact, not. There is a confusion that's going on here. That's my point, is that a significant tree is completely different from the issue of safety. So if you've got an issue with the safety, dealing with a significant tree register has basically nothing to do with that. Also, I just think that the spirit of this policy is this amendment flies in the face of that. This amendment seeks to delist a tree without public consultation. That is against the spirit of the policy. It is absolutely not what we should be doing as council. And secondly, those lobbying for this amendment, basically they're trying to say that if it doesn't pass this time, then we want to defer it. To me, that's having your cake and eating it too. And in fact, we even heard earlier that the person who wrote in support of this tree has been admonished for putting in their submission outside of the prescribed time period. And in the same breath, here we are trying to find loopholes in the prescribed time period in order to add on a tree that the public has had no capacity to have their say on. The fact is that had people known that 59 Roslyn Avenue, that tree was up for delisting, there very well could have been an enormous number of submissions in support of that tree. So the whole spirit of this process, I think, is being undermined by this amendment. And I say that with absolute respect for the intention. We all care about safety. Safety is paramount, and I'm trying to make clear that safety is always the first concern, irrespective of the significant tree policy. And we are trying here with this amendment to fix a problem that is completely... there's a misunderstanding going on, that delisting this tree won't affect the safety one direction or the other of this tree. If anything, it will just get rid of the management plan that's been suggested. And it says in the report that Council has already undertaken due diligence and appointed an arborist to undertake risk assessments of all the trees proposed to be listed as significant in the planning scheme. Risk assessments were also completed and concluded that the risk is acceptable. But it's important to note that the risk process is the same for all trees in the municipality. So really, I think that this amendment is asking us to spend up to $10,000 for something that will have absolutely nothing to do with that tree. It really is, I think, misguided, and I would kindly implore that we withdraw it at this stage. It just doesn't make sense.
Thank you. Councillor Cordover. Next, I've got Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I agree with Councillor Westwood, and that's why I've seconded the proposed amendment. I don't see this tree being much different to the situation on Osborne Esplanade, where we have an arborist report, but we also have significant community representation in relation to the tree and the effect that it has on those users of the area around that tree. And so I don't think that you can necessarily use the argument that the arborist report is the be-all and end-all when we're not accepting that in the other case either. I don't believe that the tree is a significant tree, and I believe that the amendment should be supported. And in addition to that, probably now is a good time to say as well that it's taken me a little while to get my head around why this process is the way it is, and why I've felt in the back of my mind that it hasn't really, or it doesn't really work for the process that we're trying to put in place. And I think the reason is this: because it's a council initiated amendment, and then we rely on the statutory provisions to do the consultation for us, we lose the opportunity to do genuine consultation on the significant tree register as a whole, because of what Ms. Tyler Moore has said this evening. We end up in a situation where we're not doing consultation on the significant tree register, we're only doing consultation on the amendments. And so because it's a council-initiated amendment, and I'm wary of consultation fatigue and over-consulting, but I do believe that there should be a preliminary round of community consultation in relation to the amendment before it comes to council, because we need to make a decision to initiate the amendment before any of this starts, and there should be some consultation with the community about the decision to make to initiate the amendment in the first place. Because if that happened, then that probably would have saved us from the position that we're in now, and it probably would have saved us from being in a position where we need to utilise the Section 39 report in relation to Osborne Esplanade. Because when we went out to consultation on the decision to initiate the amendment, everybody would have had the opportunity to say, hey, I've read the amendment, but in actual fact there's this other tree that you haven't mentioned that should be delisted, or hey, there's this other tree that should be listed, before we even get to the point of initiating the amendment, so that we can add them in or subtract them at that point in time. So maybe that requires us to revisit the policy, I don't know. But I think it's worth noting going forward so that we don't get trapped in this situation again.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Next, I've got Councillor Midgley, then Councillor Grace. And then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I must admit the consultation for this matter has been somewhat confusing. So I'm just wondering at all if staff can just remind us. I'm just wanting to check that we have followed all the guidelines and we didn't do any initial consultation before it went out as a statutory matter. Just wondering if I can have some further explanation of that, just so when it does come again, I'm totally across it.
Yeah, Dr. Stevenson would like to comment.
Through you, Mayor, and with apologies to Councillor Street, as part of the initial call for listings, there was opportunity for everything to be put up. And in the initial report, as Ms. Tyler Moore
suggested that came to the council around the planning scheme amendment, it did talk about what had been nominated or and what the officer's recommendations were. And that included ones that weren't recommended as part of the planning scheme amendment, and so there was the opportunity at that point. So there has been consultation that was reflected in the initial paper for the planning scheme amendment. So, and then this is the second round of consultation. This is the formal round in relation to the planning scheme amendment.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, does that answer your...
Yes, it does. Thank you. I thought that was right. I just wanted to see that my thinking, because it was quite confusing when we had a lot of phone calls about the one in front of the Surf Lifesaving Club, and it was very much, I reiterated, that they would have a chance for, to be consultation and put input into that process. So I just wanted to check that I was also giving the right advice. Just something that Councillor Street said, and sorry, I can't get the exact wording around it, I can't remember that, but it was around the Arborist report for Roslyn Avenue and Osborne, and a statement around the fact that you couldn't really see the difference in the Arborist report as to why the one that was delisted and the one that was retained. I'm just wondering at all if staff can highlight the differences and why, why it has been retained rather than be delisted.
Thank you. Ms Quinn, are you able to assist us with that?
Yes, through you, Mayor. I'd just like to clarify the question first, Councillor Midgley, if that's okay. sorry. So you're talking about why did we decide to retain the listing of the tree outside 59 Roslyn Avenue? Is that what the question is? Yeah?
And 25A Osborne Esplanade.
Sorry, what was the difference?
Yeah, what was the difference? Sorry, I can't remember the exact wording that Councillor Street said, but it was something like he couldn't see the Arborist report kind of implied similar aspects and why, if you could highlight the differences. And
absolutely. Okay, thank you. Sorry. Now I'm getting confused with all the backing and forwarding. Absolutely. So the blue gum on the road reserve at Roslyn Avenue, as I said, it's had two Arborist reports that have said that it's in the mid-tolerable range. So there's one in 500,000 chance that the gum could cause serious injury or death, which would be terrible, but the chance of that tree causing serious injury or death is... you'd have more chance of winning Tats Lotto and certainly an incredibly higher chance of being injured on the road. So I guess there's just to put some perspective on what that risk rating is, because that is hard for us to understand. So the Blue Gums Arborist reports have both come back to say that, of course, there's always a risk, but that risk is acceptable. A tree is never safe. We don't use the language that a tree is safe, because trees are inherently not safe, like most things aren't safe. But the risk is tolerable, and that's how trees are managed. Yep. And so the tree at Osborne Esplanade outside the Kingston Beach toilets. So we actually went back and had the arborist during the consultation period in April, had the arborist go back and assess that tree, because it looked like it was in even further decline than what we'd originally talked about when he looked at it the previous year. And so in the report, sorry, I'm just going to find the page. So on page, is it on page 15? Yep. So on page 15, there's an excerpt there from the most recent Arborist report in April for this white gum, and it talks about that there's been a rapid decline of 20% of the trunk on one side of the tree. So the white gum at Osborne Esplanade is actually in active decline. The blue gum at Roslyn Avenue is not in decline.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Grace, then Councillor Fox.
My question is, Mayor, this is so confusing, and the General Manager himself is at a loss too on the matter whether we put it in, take it out. Then we find the whole report when it goes to the Planning Resource Tribunal. Planning, they may throw the whole thing out and say, we'll take it away. Other people, once they learn that we've put another tree in, could come back and say, oh, well, we didn't get that opportunity. And in fairness, to be quite honest, the way this is going, I believe that, Mayor, we should defer this. There's no rush. get further advice from our general manager on the complications, whether we accept our deputy mayor's recommendation or we shouldn't, because then we know legally that we can do, because we talk of the one down at the Esplanade. The other has said now that that tree is unsafe, so rather than list it, they're going to remove it, which makes sense. But nobody at the moment has said, to my knowledge, that 59 Roslyn Avenue should come down.
That's correct.
Now, you see, this is the problem we have. But I've been away for a couple of months, and I must say I'm not fully conversed with all this, but I believe that we should ask that the thing be deferred for it to the next council meeting, giving staff and the general manager time to have a look at the situation and guide us in the right direction.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Next I had Councillor Fox and Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had a question. The management plan listed on page 8 for the blue gum at Roslyn Avenue, if we were not to allow this tree to remain listed, would that management plan still go ahead?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, because the tree is still on council land, and we've been alerted to the fact, or recommend, it's been recommended by the arborist that we have the tomography done. As I said, we've already done the trunk line monitoring and done the maintenance work that was required. So the last thing is that tomography. So yes, we would do that because an arborist has recommended we do it.
Regardless of its listing. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Three questions on that same point. I'm glad that Councillor Fox raised that. So we've just heard that the management plan will remain no matter whether this amendment passes. My question is, if this amendment passes, is it true that there will be no immediate action on the tree in terms of beyond a management plan? If this amendment passes, there'll be no action taken to reverse the decision of the two independent arborists that both agreed that the risk is acceptable, will there? I mean, nobody's going to try and change the opinion of the arborists that have already declared that this is a safe tree. So nothing's going to fundamentally change.
No, this doesn't trigger having the tree chopped down.
Exactly.
The arborists have already ruled that it is safe.
Okay, so my second question then is, so now that we've established that nothing will change if we do pass this, is it true, is it a fair characterisation that what we're doing with this amendment is essentially sneaking in after the consultation period to add in a tree? Like, is it true that we're basically adding in a tree after the consultation period?
I think that's what Ms Tyler Moore was saying, suggesting. Is that correct? Do you want to address that?
Through you, Mayor, I wouldn't use the word sneaking. I don't think there's any intent necessarily to sneak in. It's probably just a misunderstanding of the process, and it is a complicated process. But yes, it has come in afterwards. It hasn't been advertised to the public, hasn't been afforded the opportunity to respond to the request to have it delisted.
Thank you. Then my final question is it true that, because I'm just adding up some numbers in my head, is it true that potentially the cost of re-litigating this entire thing could easily be up to 10 years' worth of just paying for the management plan of this tree under the Significant Tree Register? Could it be that embarking on this process by saying yes to this amendment, could it be that that will cost 10 times the amount of the annual maintenance of this tree?
I'm not very good at maths, so you shouldn't be asking me.
$500 times 10, $5,000?
That bit I can do.
I feel like
that was a rhetorical question. I'm not sure who...
I think before we make a decision, I think I would like to know whether or not it's going to cost 10 times more.
Ms Tullamore?
Through you, Mayor, I'm not sure if I understand the question. The cost of the maintenance and the management would remain the same if listed or not listed. If the question is there a cost to go back and deal with the listing or delisting the tree, yes, there would be, but not the management would remain the same. The professionals cost the same either way.
Thank you. Yes, so there is a cost. Yes, there is a cost to passing this amendment. We'll add a price tag to this proposal. And also, by passing this proposal, nothing will fundamentally change about that tree. Nobody's going to do anything with the tree, but it will cost us about $5,000. So that's what we're voting on here, Mayor, is if we say yes to this amendment, we're asking the ratepayer to put $5,000.
It is. Well, there was a question, and yes.
And is that true?
Oh, there you go, there's a question. And I think the answer was yes. Thank you. I've got Councillor Fox next.
Thank you, Mayor. I have only asked a question, but I'm concerned about this amendment. I think it's important that we stay with the process, and I'm aware that there are a lot more trees being nominated that haven't been included in this round of consultation, and they are coming in thick and fast. And this tree at Roslyn Avenue can be added to that list. It's not as though it's the only chance for this to occur. And I think having it as part of a greater process where the community can be consulted with the other trees is a much fairer and democratic way of dealing with this situation. I can understand that the tree will be protected. It's not going to be cut down in the meantime. So there's nothing lost by leaving it where it is and including it in the next round of consultation. So therefore, I would vote against the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I think that looks like we've exhausted the discussion on the amendment. Councillor Westwood, did you want to sum up?
Yes, thank you. The consultation process has been flawed because we've known about the community sentiment towards this tree for a significant period of time before we received the first report. So why it wasn't included in the consultation that went out in the first place, I don't think is sensible. We knew that there was opposition to this tree. We have a submission from the person who originally listed the tree, so they were aware of the issue, even though the consultation that went out didn't specifically highlight the tree. So how that happened, I'm not sure. But certainly those of us sitting around this table knew that there was community concern about the tree at 59 Roslyn Avenue long before we received the initial list of proposed trees to be added to the significant tree list. I don't think the point that, you know, nothing's going to change, we still have the tree management plan, it's just going to cost more money, I don't think that's good enough reason to withdraw the amendment that I've put forth, because I still think that it's a valid point to make, that the tree is dropping limbs. I'm sure if you're walking under the tree when it drops a limb and hits you in the head, I'm not sure you're going to then think that the risk that we took was acceptable, and it's not acceptable to me. So I'm putting the amendment forth because I think the tree should be delisted. I don't think it should be listed on the significant tree list, and I would ask my colleagues to support that it is not listed and support the amendment that asks for it to be delisted.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. I'm going to put the amended motion that's moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Street. It's as printed on the screen, and I'll read it just for the record. To add a further dot point as follows, and that is that the blue gum Eucalyptus globulus in front of 59 Roslyn Avenue be delisted. All those in favour of the amendment?
Aye.
Against?
No.
Show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Wass, Street, Westwood and Reet. Those against? Is Councillors Grace, Cordova, Midgley and Fox. 4-4, the amendment is lost. So we're back on the substantive motion. Okay, Councillor Street, on the substantive motion.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I'm simply going to say this. I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, though I am disappointed that that amendment was lost. I will vote for the recommended motion. Just on the point that I'd previously made, and I say this, Dr. Stevenson, you never need to apologise for contradicting me. I suppose the only point that I make is I understand that obviously there's consultation in the lead up to the amendment being made because we call for nominations. I think the difficulty comes from the fact that it really doesn't crystallise in people's mind as a thing that is actually happening until such time as the motion to initiate the amendment is put before council. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have the answer to how to fix that, but the nature of it being that it's an ongoing process, an almost ongoing consultation on the significant tree register, makes it really difficult to, I suppose, firm up people's action on it. And then what does firm up people's action on it is the amendment coming before council for initiation, by which point it's almost too late to do anything about the representations that we're getting. Again, I don't know. I'll give some thought to how to solve that problem as well. It's probably worthy of some thought. I won't just put it back onto staff. I'll actually have a think about it myself. Because I don't think that there is an easy answer to it, but it's clearly a problem, and so that's what I'm flagging.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Any further contributions on the substantial motion? I've got Councillor Wass next.
Thank you, Mayor. The last time we discussed this, I believe that we were going to have the final say on this particular item, and certainly a number of us made the point that that tree at Roslyn Avenue was contentious and it needed to be decided. Normally I would welcome a significant tree list and anyone adding to it, but there are a couple of issues. Back 2 years ago, there were 8 people killed in 8 months in Greater Melbourne City by trees. Today was very historic in the Melbourne Court because they found a charge against the Hillsville Park and Camping Centre that allowed that person a tent to under a tree. The tree came down and killed that person. Now they've been fined. I can't tell you what that is, but they have been fined. One of the questions that I asked at the last time we discussed this in relation is who is responsible at the end of the day? And I got the report back that because we get an arborist to do the report, we are clear. I don't believe that. Since that fatality on Coolstore Street at Margate, there's been a growing interest and a growing recommendation by the community that the faceless decision makers at all levels of government and at all levels of business need to be accountable. And I think if we've got an issue and we do not accept or we do not carry that out in the interest of the welfare and safety of our community, we're at fault. And I certainly would support any move by anyone to take any member or any staff member on a charge of negligence. We know that this is a tree. In fact, about 18 months ago, I asked a question without notice on this tree. I was not aware that it was listed on the significant tree register, and I was told that I would have a report back when the arborist said the report. I don't read the significant tree list every day to see what comes and what goes, and quite frankly, nor do staff, because there are a number of trees that we found that we didn't have anymore and we took them off the list. If we're going to have trees that are going to cost us money, we've got to really look at all trees that we have. We've got to establish a maintenance plan on all trees that we have on our significant tree register. Now, that's not looking at them every 5 years. It's not looking at them every year. I think you need to look at them more and more, because if they are in danger, then people walking under, people driving under, people with their children under could unfortunately be their last walk or their last stroll. I think we've got to listen to the community. The community have made, a number of people in the community have made the recommendation that that tree needs to not only be taken off, but it needs to go. So we've gone out and got that public consultation, and with that, we've said, no, we're right. And I don't partake of that philosophy. And on that basis, because there's negligence involved, if we go ahead with this, then unfortunately, normally I would vote for it, but I have to vote against it.
Thank you, Councillor Wass.
Yeah.
Councillor Gray.
Yeah, I'm the same, and as I've mentioned around this table many times before, this council have so many trees in their municipality and rural roads, etc., and it's about time we did an audit on all our trees, not just this one. I voted against this because it's not going to achieve anything. It's the tree still going to stay there. And when I was off sick, I think it's the same tree. So many emails for people wanting that tree removed. I'm not an arborist, but by putting it into this now or taken it out of the it's not going to matter to Bob, because that tree is still going to stay there. And you've pointed out, or our staff have pointed out, because it's going to be listed as a significant tree does not spell the end that it can't be removed. If the evidence come up that that tree has to be removed, I would doubt very much whether our general manager or our staff would turn around and not act on it for the safety.
Thank you. Further contributions on the substantive motion? No. Before I ask Councillor Cordova to sum up, I just wanted to make a couple of comments in relation to the substantive motion. Look, we're focused very much on one tree here today, but of course this is about 245 different trees that we're talking about, and that's we had. I think that's something that we should be actually celebrating, the fact that we're going to be adding to the list. We already have over 400 trees on the list, so once these go through, we will have, by my calculations, I think it was 666 trees on the significant tree register. So that is something that I think we shouldn't lose in the debate about one single tree. I was happy to support the amendment because I had some comfort in Ms. Tyler Moore's her comment that we could roll the dice and just see if we could put that amendment through to the TPC to see whether they would send it back to us or not. But that was not successful. I guess moving forward, we are planning on having the significant tree register open for submissions. It will reopen again soon, and that will enable people to make nominations for either listing or delisting at any time, because what we've now done is cleared the backlog. We did have quite a significant backlog, and I'm pleased that we've been able to do that. It'll give the community a bit greater flexibility in terms of when they can nominate at any period. So I do hope that we receive additional nominations moving forward from the community. There is, as has been noted tonight, a significant amount of work that does go into the assessment and the advertising of these nominations. So I did want to thank council staff that have been involved in this process, because it is quite resource intensive. So in particular, I wanted to thank Ms. Tyler Moore, Ms. Quinn, and also our strategic planner, Mr. Stander, for the work that that they have all put into this process. So I think I'm sure that members of the Kingston Beach Surf Life Saving Club who are with us this evening, who have written in about the tree at Osborne Esplanade, will be pleased to see that it is not recommended for listing, because we are aware from further arborist report that it isn't very healthy, and it certainly didn't make sense to many of us around this table when we had the discussion previously that we would list a tree that had a very limited lifespan. So I hope that we can, and we certainly will be keeping an eye on that to make sure that it remains there whilst it is healthy enough to do so, but if it does pose a danger, that it is removed so that we can minimise the risk to not only members of the club but also others who use that facility. Having said that, Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Briefly, we focused today on a tree that wasn't even exhibited in the public consultation period, and I think that is disappointing, because what we're actually supposed to be talking about is the inclusion of 11 additional listings, the deletion of two existing listings, and amending one existing listing. And I am pleased to hear that that hopefully this will pass and that the initiated amendment to the planning scheme can go ahead. I just want to make the final observation that I think it's really important that we don't throw around terms like negligence when the report explicitly told us that the risk is acceptable, that independent arborists on multiple occasions have said that the risk is acceptable, and that council has undertaken due diligence and appointed arborists to assess the risk. Every single tree has risk, just like everything in life has risk, and we shouldn't exaggerate those risks, because by spreading that misinformation it undermines trust in our experts for no good reason. We all have feelings about trees. I sit under trees and I feel like they're not that much of a risk. I think the risk is low. Then again, on the roads I drive very slowly. Some people drive faster than me because I make a different risk assessment than they do. Some people who might be fearful of trees might drive faster. Some people wear masks in public places and others don't. We all make these choices because our risk appetites are different. So that's why it's so important that we rely on expert opinions when it comes to things of which we are not expert about. We rely on those expert opinions, even though we have every right to disagree, and sometimes I do. But expert independent arborists do have a better idea about the risk that is acceptable and what is not, based on rigorous scientific reporting. And we as councillors, by exaggerating those risks, I believe, do a disservice to the community by spreading fear that doesn't need to be there. I think there are plenty of things that we should be alert to in terms of risks in our community, and being attacked by trees is really not one of those. There are many risks throughout the community, and we have many trees, and the risk of one particular tree is in fact no greater or no less when it comes to council's liability once an expert arborist has handed down their opinion. So, you know, once again, I think that we all need to be measured in our approach to this, and we do need to utilise the expert opinion of arborists, and that's exactly what this council has done by doing its due diligence. I hope that this motion passes. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I'll put the recommendation now. It is as printed on page 8, moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Okay, a show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Grace, Cordova, Midgley, Fox, Street and Reet. Those against? Is Councillors Wass and Westwood. The motion is carried. The Planning Authority now adjourns, and the open session of Council resumes at 6:50 p.m. We turn now to page 24, petitions still being actioned. A report on the petition headed Upgrade to Car Park, Taruna Bowls and Community Club will be provided at a future Council meeting. At the time the agenda was compiled, no further petitions had been received. Officers' reports to Council. Long-term plans, recommendation on page 27. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Westwood. Before I go to Councillor Midgley to start that, can I just make the point that as we're considering in the one recommendation both the long-term financial plan but also the asset management plan, and they are both quite large documents, ideally we would have considered them in two separate agenda items. So whilst we will, everyone has 5 minutes to speak, if you do need an extension of time to be able to cover enough, please, I would encourage you to ask for that and encourage colleagues to support that so that we can ensure that we have adequate contributions on these two important issues. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So as noted by the Mayor, this discussion is about the long-term financial plan and the long-term asset management plan, which both are attached in the agenda items, and they provide the financial principles to guide the future development of annual budgets, and the overall objective is to improve Council's financial performance and position to ensure Council's financial sustainability into the future. The long-term financial plan provides a foundation and principles for moving forward over the ensuing 10-year period. And the long-term financial plan includes several strategic actions aimed at achieving long-term financial sustainability. And the long-term asset management plan shows Council's asset renewal expenditure, which is relatively low over the next 20 years, but then is increasing over the next 40 years. And this highlights that the infrastructure assets are relatively new and in good condition, which was a finding of the recent road condition assessment. So noting what the Mayor said, in my time at Council, I am not aware that we've considered the long-term financial plan and the long-term asset management plan together, and I'm just wondering why it was presented so tonight.
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Essentially, the last time both plans were considered by Council was back in 2018, and they were both considered at that point together. Since then, the long-term financial plan has been updated on an annual basis, whereas a long-term asset management plan hasn't been back to Council, and essentially that was because our asset management data was going through some significant changes during that period. We get a new asset management system. Since then we've done road condition assessment, we've recently done a road revaluation, and we've now got the asset management data to the point where it is giving us reliable information, and we can now use that information to support the long-term financial plan.
Thank you. And I just note I was alarmed on the radio this morning when I heard the news highlight that Kingborough Council will have a 30% rate rise over the next 10 years, and I've had quite a few people kind of mention that to me this morning, so I'm wondering if anyone would like to speak to that, to not alarm the community, to note that we are very different to other councils and actually have a significant low rate increase, but I'm wondering, if, just for the record, if anybody would like to speak to that and note that we are actually in good stead.
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. This afternoon, following that mention on the radio that you referred to, Councillor Midgley, I did a quick search of the websites of our Metro colleagues, Hobart, Glenorchy and Clarence. According to their websites, over the foreseeable future, in the case of both Hobart and Clarence, their long-term financial plans show increases that are higher than what is proposed in Council's long-term financial plan of 2.8. Both Clarence and Hobart are 3% or more in a couple of years' time and into the foreseeable future. In the case of Glenorchy, it's the long-term financial plan doesn't actually give a figure. If I extrapolate, which I did, the percentage increase from the figure shown over the next few years, it appears that they've got a flat rate of 2.5% suggested. But in discussions with our colleagues, both the CFO, Mr. Brent, and myself, have had indications from all three that next financial year, for example, the forthcoming budget, they will be recommending increases that start with a 3 or higher.
Thank you very much. And just wondering at all if staff would like to speak to any points regarding the long-term financial plan, noting that it does come to us annually, if they want to highlight any key points or changes or thoughts to that matter, and also with the asset management plan as well, any key highlights?
I think the highlights are actually all in the document.
They are.
A specific question would be a lot handier.
Well,
particularly given the length of the agenda
okay,
we have.
I'll let everybody else speak to those as well. I guess the only, I think it's really important to note when I said in regards to, you know, relatively low over the next 20 years in regard to the renewal expenditure, but it's increasing over the next 40 years. So that, and there was a particular figure in there that I read in that report that is kind of quite alarming, but I guess that just really faces the reality of what the future looks like and that we do have a plan for that.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Grace.
Hi. Well, I guess I speak on it each time. This will be the last time, so I might as well continue on the frame I've had over the many years, Mayor. I look at the long-term financial plan. I remember we doing that when Mayor Winter took over as Mayor, we introduced a long-term plan. What did it last 2 months and then we broke it? It's difficult for staff and it's going to be more difficult for staff to predict. I look at wages and somewhere, and I've lost it, but anyway, in there I think we're talking, is it 5%, 5.7%? Wage increases in the next year or so. There was some mention about wage increases. It says that the employees' costs are expected to increase to 7.5 million, 4.7%. That's what it's saying. That's what it has to happen. If this council want to keep staff and good staff, they're going to have to pay the correct money. I was listening to the experts on the TV, if you can call them experts in finances and stuff, and I think they were saying Tasmanians about 15% behind in just wages in most areas. I find it difficult for our staff. It's a challenging thing, I know, and I heard that we have not reached an agreement with our employees. They've rejected, what, 3 times an offer? So we have to start looking at different models, that's in my opinion, and we have to pay and try and keep our staff, because I was talking to contractors who I've known for 20 years or more. They've had to do the same thing to keep engineers. They've had to pay enormous amount of more money to be able to keep their engineers. The only other thing I want to say, because I don't want to go on and on, is, and you all know how I feel, and I'll probably mix the two together up, but you will understand where I'm coming from. In the long-term financial plan, we never get anywhere where council, where I can see, and I looked at quite a few yesterday, back through years, savings, such as with our roadworks, with our we've got listed here our sealing, our non-sealed roads, etc., etc. And I don't know how many times I've mentioned about sealing roads compared to gravel roads. A good example is I've had 14 phone calls in the last 2 weeks when we got that heavy rain on how their roads were washed out, gravel roads. So I went and had a look at some of our other roads that we sealed, and they weren't marked. The only thing that was evidence was a bit of washout in the edges of the shoulder of the roads. Finance to me, and I'm not a financial person, our deputy mayor is pretty good at doing that sort of stuff. Not saying none of the other councils are, by the way, but over the time she's been on the council, Councillor Westwood, the time you've been on the council and Councillor Cordo, I've listened, because there's so many things that you just pick up that I'm not. Because I've got my mind set on my issues relating finance and works and that sort of thing. And we're going into, well, you guys are going to go into tough times, particularly now interest rates are starting to move, and they will continue to move. I hope this works. Which way I vote on it, it doesn't really matter, because I've got no doubt it will get passed, and it will get passed here tonight. But when the new council elected...
Sorry, Councillor Grace, Mr Smee has just indicated you've gone beyond your time. Did you want to move to be allocated some additional
Look,
time?
Look, not really, because everyone, you know my feelings in
But if you wanted to continue, I'm sure your colleagues
well,
would...
Well, can I have a couple of... Yep, thank you. Yep.
So I've got a motion moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Midgley, that Councillor Grace be given additional 3 minutes.
Thank you very
All those
much.
In favour?
Aye.
Aye. Against? Carried.
Now
thank
I can
you.
Talk. Yeah, I'd like to see in the future that the long-term financial plan, our works and all that sort of stuff, is to show us where we failed or where we haven't met our commitments, etc., etc., because it's very difficult to be able to meet them. I've said this, I think, before in our strategic plan and that sort of stuff. How can we improve the services? We talk about it, but I've never seen a report in 22 years to tell me as a councillor how we can save money on providing services. Thank you, Mayor. That's all I need to say, and I thank the financial people for putting this together.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Next on my list, I had Councillor Fox, then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I am concerned about the long-term financial plan and the impact of inflation on council. The CPI has just gone up by 5%, and I realise that the council basket of goods is quite separate. It's concrete, pipes, bitumen, etc. It costs a lot more, and the CPI for council is probably way above 5%. We may have the highest income per capita in Kingborough, and I don't understand why it's so important that we keep our rates low. And is this really doing our community a service, especially when we've got massive growth and we've got people who really want to live here? I'm also concerned that the capital works that we're trying to do at the moment are coming in with tenders that are beyond our current budget, and we're considering using next year's budget to pay for this year's capital works. So have we undercooked the books, basically? I guess if we can't afford capital projects, our rates will have to go up next year and the year after, and yet we're locking ourselves in to a pretty small increase, if any, over the next 10 years. We've also got a high turnover of staff, and we've got pressure from the community to do more works, more maintenance, and more capital projects. So I understand that tonight is possibly not the time to be raising these concerns, but I want to put them on the record. And I guess when we're making the rate decision, we can reconsider that when that comes to council in the near future. But I am concerned the way the economy is going at the moment and the way that this council is possibly getting behind the eight ball. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next I had Councillor Cordova, and then I think Councillor Grace, do you have a question after that?
Sorry, no.
No, thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is about stormwater, turning our attention to stormwater. When we initially did our stormwater system management plan, that report said that approximately 3,000 out of our 9,500 pipes, that is 32% of our pipes, have a less than 2-year ARI capacity, meaning that, when you get a once-in-2-year flood, for want of a better term, our pipes aren't, the aperture is too narrow, essentially. And also, more than half of pipes, 53% of pipes, have a less than 5% AAP, or 20-year ARI capacity. Meaning that once in every 20 years we anticipate that half of our pipes will flood, and we're starting to see more and more severe weather events that are more frequent as a result of anthropogenic climate change. So my question is, when we're looking now at the renewal summary, I'm looking at now page 75 or page 17 of the asset, the long-term asset management plan. Over the next 10 years, it says, there is lesser requirement for asset renewal, and the timing of non-critical renewal requirements can be linked to associated road and footpath renewal projects to minimise disruptions and inconvenience to the public. My question really is, how does this long-term asset management plan align with the recommendations in the stormwater system management plan, and are we anticipating that we are going to fix those pipes so that 1 in 3 isn't deficient, and that for a once-in-2-year event, and so that those more than half of pipes which are not fit for purpose for a once-in-20-year event will be fixed.
Thanks. Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, thanks for the question, and it's a good question. So there's a couple of things with it. First of all, what you're referring to in the asset management plan there is renewal, which is a little bit different to capacity constraints, which are upgrades, so a little bit of a different beast, if you like. And that's typically what we see with stormwater there. The stormwater is a long-lived asset, and generally our stormwater network, for what we know, bearing in mind it's underground, is in reasonable condition in terms of a repair or renewal. However, we do know that there is capacity issues, as most other councils are actually facing, across the board, and that is why we put quite a bit of effort into actually doing catchment management plans for various different areas there, which then go into the details of actually highlighting where we may actually have particular capacity issues. So the report you were referring to there provided a very good high-level overview of the whole urban area, and then the catchment plans actually go into the details. So even though you may identify that there's potential for under-capacity pipes, until you do that detail there, till you determine whether or not that's actually going to cause an issue for properties, till you determine whether or not there's actually overland flow paths there will actually can take some of the capacity there, you don't know what your works are going to be going forward. However, I will say that in terms of our planning for the future there, particularly for stormwater, a lot of the projects that will come up in the next 5 to 10 years will be capacity-based projects, not renewal-based projects, capacity-based projects.
Okay, thank you. I could spend some time trying to figure that out, and we might just take that offline. I mean, I'll just make the point that I would hope that as part of this plan, we are trying to meet those high-level expectations that were made in that original stormwater report. My next question is turning our attention now to the building of roads and roadkill mitigation. I think that all new construction work is actually an invaluable opportunity to incorporate roadkill mitigation strategies and technologies into all new roads that we do. And I just wonder whether our long-term asset management plan reflects firstly, the retrofitting of existing roads to incorporate roadkill mitigation technologies. We're talking whether it's acoustic barriers or traffic calming there's a whole list of potential roadkill mitigation technologies that can be rolled out. And whenever you're building new roads, I would expect that we would incorporate those technologies into all new roads and also have a plan for retrofitting our roads so that we're no longer the roadkill capital of the nation. Is there any commentary around, does this asset management plan speak to roadkill mitigation at all?
I'm not sure that we are the roadkill capital of the nation. Let's not make things up. Mr. Reeve, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Look, there's nothing specific there that actually goes into that specific issue that you've actually raised there. Having said that, we will look at each area on a case-by-case basis there. I'd also point out that there's many technologies out there in terms of looking at roadkill, and a lot of effort's gone into various different acoustic barriers and so forth there, and to limited success in some instances as well. So as much as sometimes the technology actually promises a lot, it doesn't always deliver as much. So to actually take a high-level plan and then try and interpret that by actually putting in that overlay is a little bit difficult. It's more on a case-by-case basis rather than not. So probably the easy answer is no, but I guess the secondary answer is yes, we would take that into account where we could.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, that's really encouraging that we, particularly with things like underpasses and overpasses, wildlife corridors, there are options out there, and we should be trying to incorporate those where possible and factor that into our long-term planning as well, because these things don't come cheap. My second last question probably is about the buildings, in terms of our buildings and the asset management of that. Does what we're planning for here with our asset renewal include the cost of additional technologies like incorporating solar panels on roofs of community halls? And things like that.
Mr. Reeve.
Three, Mayor. As I said, I mean, similar as to the last one there, we certainly try and take that into account where we can. So not all, it's horses for courses for a lot of this stuff as well, in terms of whether you get your financial return as well on some of these things. So the figures that we actually have in the asset management plan are generally based on a building, a replacement cost for a building, and all the maintenance cycles associated for that building as well at the same time. Certainly take into account that things are changing and changing all the time there, particularly with technologies there, and that's the idea of actually trying to be adept with that as well at the same time there. So even though that provides a very good high-level view of things. You know, once again, we need to be adept in change as things come up as well. Look at options to actually save on our operational costs in particular. So solar panels is an example of one of those. And I guess be fairly quick on our feet in terms of trying to deal with those as well. But I think as a document there, which is a long-term document there, bearing in mind that we will look at trying to actually get more regular updates for the asset management plan as well in response to some of these things going forward.
Thank you so much. Just to conclude my remarks, Mayor, to say that I think in terms of environmental sustainability and this notion of donut economics or the triple bottom line, where we think about people and planet as well as just trying to balance the books over the long term with respect to our infrastructure, I think that there are huge opportunities with long-term planning that factors in things like roadkill mitigation or factors in things like putting solar panels on council-owned buildings, that factors in making our stormwater fit for purpose in light of a changing climate. So it's that environmental sustainability that I think we need to change the lens through which we look at long-term planning to factor in those risks and also to embrace some of the enormous economic opportunities that come with adapting and becoming more resilient in the face of a changing climate. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next I had Councillor Westwood, then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I support this long-term financial plan. I know there has been some commentary today in the media about our proposed rate rise of 2.8% per annum per year for the next 10 years. When I was first elected to council, that figure sat at 4%. So I think 2.8% is more than reasonable given the current rate of inflation. I do have sympathy for people who are experiencing cost of living pressures, and I certainly know that my grocery bill has increased, and interestingly groceries are one of the biggest component increases which has contributed to inflationary pressures along with transport and housing. The CPI currently sits at 5.8% for Hobart, so an increase in our rates of 2.8% I don't think is unreasonable. I do acknowledge that this will have some impact on our residents, particularly those that pay rates. But council does have services to provide. Our community has very high expectations of the services we provide. I had a conversation today with a lady and I implored her to tell me one thing that she thought council does currently that it should not do going forwards, and she could not give me one single thing. And I really do think the community, whilst it might groan and grumble about rate increases, and rightly so because it does hit their hip pocket, they do appreciate the services we provide, and I think that if they had a full understanding of the absolute huge remit of local government, I think that there would be more sympathy to the role that we have around the table in trying to balance the delivery of services with collecting revenue from ratepayers to provide those services. I'm interested that the long-term financial plan has come to us with a long-term asset management plan. That hasn't happened during my time on council. I do wonder if it's because a key part of the financial management plan has changed. The financial management plan, and this is highlighted in the report at 4.2, the main change to the long-term financial plan is the result of the availability of asset replacement data that indicates that council only needs to fund asset renewal at 70% of depreciation over the next 10 years. So one of our financial principles in the long-term financial plan is that future population growth is supported by an infrastructure renewal program and development of new infrastructure. The strategic action that supports that, as listed in our current long-term financial plan, is that asset renewal is funded at a rate of 90% of the depreciation rate or higher. And I understand that we may not have been hitting that 90% target, but I do note that the long-term asset management plan on page 26 or page 84 of our agenda paper states that the asset management plans indicate that over the next 10 years, council should be spending approximately $6.1 million unadjusted for inflation per annum on capital renewal. This is, I think it was 70%. of depreciation at $6.1 million. And I just had a question around that because the long-term financial plan before us has a change to that strategic action and the progress associated with it. I'm sorry, I'll just find where it is. Because I was just going to inquire, the progress against that strategic action that is before us tonight states that from 2023-24 onward, the long-term financial plan enables Council to invest the required $6.1 million per annum in asset renewal to cover asset replacement costs over the next 10 years. Given that's from 2023-24 onward, is that $6 million intended to be adjusted for inflation over the course of this long-term financial plan? Because I assume like next year it should be $6.1 million plus inflation and so on and so on. Is that the intent? Because we haven't actually got that written in here.
Mr. Breen.
So that's essentially the intent. So our asset values will go up, most likely in line with inflation, perhaps slightly more, and so therefore our funding renewals will go up in line with our depreciation. So both sides, I guess, of the equation move, so therefore it's correct to say $6.1 million unadjusted for inflation at the moment.
Okay, so next year when the long-term financial plan comes to Council, that will be, I don't know what it would be, $6.5
million? Slightly higher, yes. Correct.
Something like that? Yeah. Okay. And then just a question around one of the assumptions of the long-term financial plan with regards to increase in materials. I think you had down that it was, sorry, just finding it, materials and contract costs to increase at 2.5% per annum. So I'm assuming this is 2.5% over each of the next 10 years. I think it would be safe to say that the indexation at the moment is more than 2.5%, that increase in cost is an increase of 2.5% adequate at this point in time.
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So I guess essentially the long-term financial plan is a 10-year plan based on a number of assumptions. So the expectation is that over that extended period of time, the Reserve Bank will meet its target and average out the movement in CPI at 2.5%. That's what they're aiming for. So while we may have some short-term pain with some, particularly where we're situated at the moment with inflation high for the next year or two, the expectation is that over the 10 years that will come back down and average that 2.5%. So it may give us some short-term fluctuations, but the expectation is in the long term that we will meet those targets.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I support the plans, and I thank staff for all the hard work that's gone into them. I know it's not an easy process, very long process, to update these plans, so thank you for bringing them forward. It's particularly pleasing to me that Council is returning to an underlying surplus, or is on track to return to an underlying surplus. That strengthens Council's financial viability and stability. And it strengthens our ability to provide services to the community going forward. It is, I suppose, a bit disappointing that these debates often end up boiling down to the increase in rates. That is natural, though. Ultimately, that is where the rubber hits the road for our ratepayers. And so, Mayor, I think I need to touch on something that was brought, or a question that was asked during the debate, and that is, why is it so important that we keep our rates low? Mayor, it's important that we keep our rates low because real people are required to pay the rates that we set. It's very easy to say that there's capacity out there to pay in some hypothetical pool of money, but it's worth remembering, I think, that the people who actually have to pay those rates are young families, they're single parents, they're people that live alone, they're pensioners. They're not just the wealthy. They're not just double income, no kid householders. They're real people who are really struggling with cost of living pressure. And that's why it's important that we do keep our rates low, because ultimately those are the people that pay the rates that we set. Mayor, it's easy for the Mercury to compound the rate increase out over time and get a figure that's worthy of a newspaper headline. But the reality of that figure is that it's still going to leave Kingborough as one of the lowest rating councils in the state. And I should say this as well. High rates are not a virtue in and of themselves. They don't guarantee better service delivery. And we've got plenty of evidence of that. I defy anyone to tell me that the ratepayers of Glenorchy are better served than the ratepayers of Kingborough. It's simply not the case. In fact, the reverse is true. And Glenorchy pay far higher rates than a Kingborough resident does, and a Kingborough resident ever should have to. We're an efficient council. We keep our waste low. We deliver services that the community really needs. We're conscious of the community's capacity to pay and ability to pay and what we should reasonably expect each other to pay. We do that for our ratepayers, we do that for each other, and I think that's a virtue worth having.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Walsh.
Thank you, Mayor. I think very much that, to start with, that Kingborough has been very fortunate over the last 10, 12, 14 years with the calibre of our general manager and our staff that are always looking for ways of doing things a little bit different. I go back to when we first set the long-term financial plan. It was over 10 years at 4%. We didn't like it, but that was the best way that we figured at the time of going forward. Unfortunately, during that time, we did continue to spend surplus funds year to year on other projects instead of perhaps putting them into a priority order for the coming year. I think with the long-term asset management plan, we've set the groundwork going forward. Before Southern Water and before Tas Water, we were 10 years ahead in relation to doing the Blackmans Bay Treatment Plant study and knowing what had to be done, which incidentally Tas Water took up and did. We were the only council in Tasmania that had lids on all of our water reservoirs when we handed over our water. We've also tackled climate change. We've installed solar panels. We've got electric vehicle. We've got LED street lighting. All bridges, when they were repaired after the 67 fire, have been by permanent materials, and that has saved us as we've gone forward. I think what we have tonight is a comprehensive report for all councillors and also for community members alike. It's there, it's available, it's on public record, and hopefully community will have a read of it. And as Councillor Westwood said, defy anyone to try and find an area where we haven't tried to cater for. I don't think we should get carried away about being the lowest amongst Hobart city councils or greater councils. It is a nice fact, but the main thing which our community want from us is to set a realistic budget that will provide for the present and future needs of our community going forward. And we are, as was said, the lowest charging council, and that is a bonus, it's a benefit. And as I said before, I think we've been fortunate with our general manager and staff over the last 10, 12 years. I think mainly it's fairly obvious to all and sundry that we need to meet planned programs on time that cater for the future. I guess climate change is a good example. We spoke about, I think it was Councillor Cordova said a few moments ago, 1 in 20 year flood. I think we've got to lift our horizon there. It's a 1 in 100 year flood we've got to do. We had one a couple of years ago. We're going to get another one, if not this year, next year or the year after. And I think we've got to cater. Our infrastructure needs to cater for that. The last thing we want to do is see roads and bridges and everything else washed away. We don't want to see families suffering because their house is inundated with water. We don't want to see what's going on in Queensland. There are so many aspects that we've done, and I do support the recommendation. And as I said, I think the comprehensive report is there for all the community to have a look at, and if the community want to be involved, then certainly we'll take them on board with us and take them along the journey with us. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Woss. Before I ask Councillor Cordova to sum up, I just wanted to make a couple of comments in the long term.
Just a question.
Councillor Grace on a question.
Yeah, on all this stuff about the infrastructure, I just wonder, we've never sort of got a report back on, remember when we finished the levy at the tip and I put to council that we take that levy on stormwater?
Well, we do have a stormwater levy.
Yeah, to help bring the stormwater system. At that time, we was having massive problems in
Grattan. Yeah, so we've had a stormwater levy for 3 or 4 years now.
It's been 3 or 4 years, I guess you're right. I'd like to know just how much help has that done by, you know, increasing or the size of pipes or whatever, or how many limitations has it taken people from being flooded out by that initiative to put that extra thing on? Because I still get asked questions about it. Nobody's really complaining about it. That's good, because we can see the benefit of it, I suppose.
I think it might be valuable if we have a workshop at some stage about stormwater, because I know that when we've had presentations to the Kingborough Community Forum, there was one that was done last year, which was really valuable, an overview of, you know, here are the things we do within stormwater, but also, you know, this is where, these are the costs associated with it, and this is where, these are the standards we're working out. I think that might be a really worthwhile workshop topic, if Mr. Reeve, you might want to have that for us at some stage, but feel free to answer the question.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, Mayor. Certainly one of the bodies of work that we're doing at the moment there, which is still in draft stage, but it's due to actually be completed sometime shortly, is a stormwater strategy. So that could actually be a good way of actually having that workshop with council and going through that, because what that does is it goes through all these issues that have been discussed here that Councillor Cordova and Councillor Grace and others have actually mentioned, in particular about stormwater. So maybe that'll be the opportunity we're looking for to actually have that workshop.
Thank you. So just before I ask Councillor Cordova to sum up, just a couple of comments that I wanted to make on the long-term financial plan, because I think there has been, thanks to the media reporting, a little bit of confusion about what it is that we're doing tonight, and I think there's a perception that we're locking ourselves into a certain path for the next 10 years. But as the summary for the report indicates, the long-term financial plan is certainly an important part of Council's framework for financial management and, quite frankly, as part of good governance. It ensures that we do remain financially viable over time, and that is important to us so that we can continue to provide the services to our community at a level that they expect. But I also think it is about sort of transparency and accountability. I think it's important that we do set out in this plan the decisions that we can show that the decisions that we make in relation to where we're spending our money and how, that they're being done in a strategic way and that they're not being done ad hoc. So the underpinning principles are very important. We do know that in past years, and Councillor Woss has already alluded to it, that it hasn't always been the case that we've had the best financial management in Council, and it did mean that we accumulated some debt and were, along with many other councils, had the Auditor General breathing down our necks and wrapping us over the knuckles about turning that around. And I think it's a great credit to staff and also people sitting around this table that we've been able to do that over a long period of time, so that we can be sustainable moving forward. Now, the question of rates, of course, is an interesting one. And I think we always need to remember, or we need our community members to remember, that as a council we have very limited income sources. And over two-thirds of our income, in fact 70% of our income, comes from our rates revenue. We're not like other levels of government where we have opportunities to raise income from a range of other means, but also we're not immune to the impacts of things like COVID, which we know impacted our business, price rises, as we've already discussed today, we're not immune to those either. So we do know that we're having some difficulties with some of the capital projects and the tenders that are coming in, and that's a flow-on effect of general price rises in the building and construction industry. And as the price rises of other goods go up, that obviously impacts us as well. So I do think what's also positive about this is that there are highlighted some opportunities moving forward as to how we could actually have some further income sources moving forward, such as developer contributions. That's something that we've talked about consistently, but also the continued opportunity to cost share with other councils. You know, we already do work well with our neighbouring councils, with the Huon Valley, with cost sharing on a range of projects, but also with ones within the Greater Hobart area. So I think we need to remember that what we're doing here is being strategic. We're not locking ourselves in. If something happens in a couple of years' time that we cannot anticipate, as we did in response to COVID, where we pivoted and we provided assistance to members of our community and to businesses who were doing it tough, this is a framework, and we will be able to do that in the future as well, should that eventuate. So I thank the staff for the comprehensive work that's been done on this, and I'll hand over to Councillor Cordova to sum up. Oh, I beg your pardon. Sorry, I had Councillor Cordova. I beg your pardon. I was looking at the wrong item. I kept saying Councillor Cordova. No wonder you look surprised. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. I haven't got much to say. Just to note, thanks to councillors for your contribution. I think they're wide and varied, but really considered that we're at the heart of everything we do. Sorry, what's our line of strategic plan? The community is at the heart of everything we do. I feel like that, all the sharing and notes from the councillors tonight really adhere to that. And Councillor Street and Councillor Westwood, you know, noting the increased cost of living, that our ratepayers are wide and varied. Councillor Fox made some great points in regards to the economics of what society is looking like today, but the Mayor discussing that we do review the annual plan, as we did for COVID, and it isn't set in concrete for the next 10 years, that it does come with an annual review and with expertise and guidance from staff. So thanks everyone for your contribution, and thank you, Mr Breen, for comprehensive reports for the long-term financial plan and the long-term asset management plan.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'm going to put the motion now as printed on page 27. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Cordova, Woss, Midgley, Fox, Street, Westwood and Reet. Those against? Councillor Grace. The motion is carried. I'm going to call a short comfort break of till about, look, I always say 5 minutes and it ends up being longer because we can't corral you back. It's like herding cats. So if you could please be back at 7:45 p.m. on the dot to make a start, that gives you an extra couple of minutes. Thank you.